This is Carol Cook, and when I'm not busy doing television or Broadway or the movies or just coming over to your house to play dress up, I listen to Feast of Fun, the best podcast ever. I want you to do that. Okay? See you soon.
Actress Carol Cook was bound for Broadway when she got a call from Lucille Ball to audition for a part in her stage revue. Carol was so impressive that Lucille took her under her wing and gave Carol her stage name in honor of her dearly departed friend, actress Carol Lombard, because she felt they both share the same healthy disrespect for everything in general.
It was the start of a lifelong friendship and working relationship between the two, with Carol appearing in many of Lucy's television shows. She would also appear in several cult movies, like 16 Candles and The Incredible Mr. Limpet, and such popular TV dramas as Grey's Anatomy and Dynasty.
Today we talk to the legendary Carol Cook about her work and friendships with many of comedy's leading ladies, including Carol Channing, Ethel Merman, Joanne Worley, and of course, Lucille Ball.
What was it like living and working with Lucy?
What happened between Carol and Molly Ringwald in the film 16 Candles?
And did Lucille Ball ever get over her divorce from Desi Arnaz?
Plus, questions from you, the listeners. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Billion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation, buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hi, Carol. This is Fausto Fernos.
Hi, Fausto. How are you?
Fine. We're just setting our sound levels here for 1 second.
So okay.
You're coming in a bit hot.
Well, story of my life. From your mouth to God's ears, sweetheart.
Carol, can you just give us a quick hello?
Yes, and a very quick hello and a goodbye and good luck. It doesn't matter, darling. We're all circling the drain.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, is that good enough?
No, if you just can give me a little silent pause and then just pretend like you just answered the phone so we can do a clean intro.
Oh, okay. In other words, stop now and then come in?
Yes.
I don't wait for you to talk.
No, just pretend like you just answered the phone.
Okay. Hello?
Is this Carol Cook?
The one and only.
This is Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Pillion from the Feast of Fun podcast. How are you today, Carol?
So far, so good, but you two may muck it up for me. I don't know.
Well, I hope we don't disturb you too much today.
No. At these prices, sweetheart, I mean, you pay so much, I'll be happy to do it. Keep me off the unemployment line. Anyway, I'm good. Thank you. Are you both okay?
We're doing fantastic. Today is a sunny day here in Chicago. The birds are chirping, and we are talking to such a glorious, fabulous diva as yourself.
Oh, my God, I just love it. I'd like that on a pillow.
I bet you got it somewhere. Oh.
Well, I've got pillows, I know that.
Now, I want to start off by talking about your deep, deep, lasting friendships with some of the world's most loved comedic actresses of all time. Carol Channing, who you're sharing a stage with.
Love her, yes.
And you guys are performing in at Help Is On The Way, Northern California's largest annual AIDS benefit concert in August, right?
That's right. In San Francisco on August 15th.
Mm-hmm. And you're also good friends with Joanne Worley.
A very good friend. Yes, I love her.
But your first, the most lasting friendship and professional relationship was with Lucille Ball.
That's right. I became Lucille Ball's protege. And, you know, I consider myself, and not because of knowing a famous person, I swear to God, that is, it's to be around, it sounds so corny, but it's being around that kind of talent. You know, I kept with Lucille Ball, I consider myself very lucky, other than the ladies you mentioned, also mm-hmm. a good friend, Lucille Ball and Ethel Merman. And they were two of my best friends, and my husband and myself. And, you know, I guess in some demented way, I thought, well, if I'm around them long enough, some of that will just splash over on me, you know.
And you're all redheads.
And, well, speaking of splashing, I said, I've got the, everybody said, oh, Carol, if they say, I love your hair. And I said, thank you, it's Lucille Ball hair dye. And I said, and I'm almost running out. I didn't realize I'd live this long.
Well, how did you and Lucille Ball come together? How did you meet?
Well, I was, and my vision when I was young was always to go to New York. That's all I cared about, going to New York, Broadway. That was for me. And my mother would take us, I come from a little town called Abilene, Texas, and she would drive us to Dallas, Texas to see the great people of that era, Alfred Lynn Fontaine, and Ethel Merman, and Mary Martin, and Helen Hayes, all of those people. And I cannot remember. I really can't. I don't know. It's like a corny story, but I can't remember ever not wanting to be on the stage.
So are you telling me that you actually were a fan of all these leading ladies,
you
and
bet.
Then you became friends with them?
Oh, yeah. Well, I became good friends of Ethel Merman and Lucille Ball, certainly. Lucille Ball was matron of honor at the, when I married Tom Troop and my darling husband of 46 years. Mm. And they said it wouldn't last, please.
You were saying in an interview that it was you said it was a big mistake to have Lucille Ball be the matron of honor.
Oh, sweetheart. Nobody cared a damn about me. I mean, do not have Lucille. People said, how did Carol look? They said, who cared? Lucille Ball was a matron of honor. I mean, I had 10 groomsmen. Tom had 9 of his friends. We had 10 groomsmen and Lucille Ball and myself. It looked like an old Ziegfeld Follies number. You know, I mean, a little trashy, but classy. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So did you end up going to Broadway right away, or was it Hollywood
called? No, I went to New York, and I was out in summer stock. This is apropos of you asking me, you know, you have to cut me off and say too much information, Carol. But I was out in summer. I was out in summer stock in Warren, Ohio. I mean, that's really out in summer stock.
Mm-hmm.
And New York, I'd been there just a little bit, and I was out in summer stock. And they called me to the phone during rehearsal of a show called Kismet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing a character called La Loom. And the whole characterization was in my bust line. That's all. It was just very decorated tits.
It was
That's
a profound
was.
Role.
So, well, whatever. And so I used to come out on stage, and my tits preceded me by 3 feet, you know. And but anyway, the phone rang. They said, my real name was Mildred Cook. And they said, Mildred Cook to the phone. I came to the phone, and it was a friend of mine named Dick Coleman that I had, was an acquaintance, not a good friend, in New York, and I hadn't seen him probably for a year or more, and didn't know where he was. He came on the phone. He said, I'm in Los Angeles. He said, I'm in a group of, young people, that Lucille Ball is getting her divorce from Desi, and she has gotten this group of people together to do scenes and things like that. And they met, I don't know how often they met, probably 2 or 3 times a week. And he said, we're getting ready to do a review. And he said, Lucy and himself, which was Dick, and a guy that you may know named Robert Osborne, who's the MC on Turner Classic Movies.
Ah.
Well, he was one of the young people in the group then. And we all have white hair now, but I just cover mine. Anyway, he said, we're in her living room. She needs a comedian for this show, little review we're doing on the lot of Desilu at the little theater there. So he said, and here's Lucy. She wants to talk to you. I was so nervous. I mean, that was like Cinderella, you know. I mean, out of left field. And I couldn't think fast enough to say, I wanted to say Mrs. Arnaz, and I didn't know whether to say that or Miss Ball. So I said, oh, hi, Miss R. Balls. And I'm not kidding. From then on, she signed all of her letters to me and everything, Miss R. Balls.
That's tough.
And so, anyway, she said, we're doing this show. Would you fly out here and let me take a look at you? So I did. I came out on a weekend. I had to go to Hyannis, Massachusetts the next week to do another show. It's summer. I was playing the big musical Tents, and that's, you go from week to week, you know, each place. So I flew out here, met her, And she said, I want you for the show. And we went out to dinner, and we were talking, the four of us. That was Bob Osborne, Dick Coleman, Lucy, and myself. And as we talked, in fact, to be truthful, she had taken me to the theater that afternoon, and I wasn't a nightclub comedian, so I had no act, which was a little drawback. But I just talked, and I don't think it went well at all that afternoon. But that night, we went to dinner. I was staying in the guest house at her house, so we went to this Italian place for dinner. And as we're talking, by then, my nerves had calmed down, and I thought, well, I've blown it anyway. This is not going well. And she won't take me for the review. So as she started asking where I came from, I started talking about my grandmother, whom I disliked. And I was, you know, in telling it, you know, I did my usual thing of smart-ass remarks. And at the end of the evening, she said, I would love for you to come out here and do the show. But she said, I know you've had your name, Mildred, for a very long time, and you're used to it, and people don't like to give up their names, but I wonder if you would change your name. I said, yes, whatever. I mean, I quickly said, she said, would you change it to Carol for Carol Lombard? She was a great, great admirer of Carol Lombard. Do you all even know who that is?
Yeah, I remember seeing Lucy on the Dick Cavett show, and she talked about how much she loved Carol Lombard.
She loved Carol Lombard. Was a big star when Lucille Ball was just like a showgirl in the movies, and evidently, I don't mean she was, you know, telling me I'm like Carol Lombard, but what she was saying, I think she said Carol Lombard. And I remember the words, had a healthy disrespect for everything in general.
And Lucille Ball said that you had the same disrespect
yes,
for things.
And that's what she said. So she said, you have that same healthy disrespect. And I said, of course I do. Whatever, I stayed with the money, honey.
Okay.
And she wrote out the name Carol on the tablecloth. I'd give anything if I'd save that tablecloth. She wrote it out, C-A-R-O-L-E, and without the E. She wrote it all different ways, with a K, with a... And she said, I would like for you to use the way she spelled it, Carol Lombard. So
it's exactly the same way that drag queen mothers give their drag queen daughters stage names, right?
Sweetheart, it's exactly like that.
Well, let me ask you this, Carol, because on your Wikipedia, we're researching you, on your Wikipedia, the exact quote is this that it says. It says, you have the same healthy disrespect for all things in general. Is it all things in general, or is it everything in general?
Isn't that funny? I remember it as everything.
Well, then we're going to change it to everything.
Okay, Wikipedia, you're welcome.
Oh, wonderful. That's not going to be on a tombstone or anything. I'll check that before you do that, sweetheart. Don't give me a big headache now.
What was it like, because you were in Here's Lucy and the Lucy Show, and you guys rehearsed and developed the... How did the rehearsal process go in working with Lucille Ball?
Well, Lucille Ball was a taskmaster. Not very amusing in rehearsal. By that, I mean, she was a genius, but her rehearsal, she loved to rehearse. I mean, as she got older, when she never retired. She said they made her retire. In other words, the series ran out, and she tried others, but they didn't work. But honestly, I thought she was never happy after, and it wasn't that she had all the money in the world, all the fame. That was beside the point. She loved the work. She loved going in at 9 o'clock in the morning and getting home in the evening. And she told me she was never happier than when she was under contract, just as a bit player. And she'd be, you know, an Indian one day and a antebellum colonial lady the next day. She loved the process of the work. So she carried that into her, when she became a star and all that, she loved the rehearsing of it. And when she rehearsed, she was very serious. I don't mean unpleasant, but she, very professional. Mm. Extremely professional.
But, I mean, did you ever get nervous, or did you, because you so much looked up to her,
yes,
and you were, you know, you didn't want to also sort of ruin your friendship with the quality of your performance, too.
I know, and as a matter of fact, I got Hello, Dolly while I was doing, was it Here's Lucy or Lucy? Anyway, I was rehearsing with her one day, and there were people in the grandstand. It was a rehearsal. And it was when I first came out here, so I was very nervous. And remember, I lived at her house, so I was used to Lucy being like we were pals together and laughing together. We had a great time, and she would do my hair. She said if I weren't a star, I'd be a beautician. But trust me.
So you guys have the same hair dye.
You bet your ass.
Is there a brand or like a number?
No, I'll be honest. Hers was much brighter than mine. Mine is darker red. Now, it may have been, and it was always red, so
can I stop you right there, Carol?
Sure.
For the listeners who want to dye the hair the same color, what is the hair dye and the hair color?
Oh, my God.
Do you know?
I'm going to tell them the wrong thing. It's L'Oreal, but I don't know and it's just straight. Whatever the color is, it's not mixed or anything. It's just straight.
So you open up the package and you spoon it on yourself?
Well, I don't open up the package. I don't. I know better than that. But my darling Gary Goyer opens the package for me and does it for me. But I want to finish. Finish this. So I was nervous about rehearsing. Now, there were people watching, maybe 100 people watching. And it had always been said that Lucille Ball, one day she got angry at the powers that be when it was called RKO, and she was under contract. It became Desilu later when she and Desi were. But it was always said that she got mad one day and she stormed out and said, one day I'm going to own all of this, not expecting to do it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was rehearsing with her, and I came out, did my speech. She stopped me in the middle of it. She said, you're losing heart in the middle of this, Carol. You cannot lose heart. You will lose the audience. You've got to plow on through. You don't wait for laughs. You don't. And she really let me have it. Well, I was near tears because I had not seen that side of her. It had all been darling. So I turned. She said, go out and come in the door again. So I went out, and it was kind of like bar doors that would swing back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was to keep from crying. I thought, and I'd only been here like 2 weeks. I turned around and walked back into the set where she was standing, and everything was quiet. And I said, Miss Ball. She said, yes. I said, someday I'm going to own all of this. And turned and got my tail out of there. Well, let me tell you, there wasn't a sound. I kept walking. I thought, well, I'll just walk out the gates, get a bus, and go back to New York. And then she started laughing. Oh. And once she laughed, everybody laughed. But where were they when I needed them, you know? But she screamed. She said, that's funny. And I said, well, you were supposed to have said that to the hierarchy. And she said, oh, darling, I never had that kind of guts. I would have never done that.
The work you guys were doing was really innovative, not just in terms of the genre of TV sitcoms, but technically innovative as well. I Love Lucy was the first TV show to record onto 35mm film using a 3-camera system in front of a live studio audience, right?
Correct.
And it feels to me that a lot of the innovation came also in the way you guys worked and in the ways you rehearse and wrote the shows very quickly, which kind of reminds me of the way internet web series and video bloggers work.
Oh, yes. And, you know, she had brilliant, brilliant writers, Madeline Martin Pugh and Bob Carroll, and they wrote all the original. Now, I wasn't here when they did I Love Lucy. They were just finishing that when I came because it was in the midst of a bad time for Lucy and Desi. It was their divorce.
Sure.
But when we rehearsed the Desilu Review, that's the name of the little show I did on the lot, Lucy was she was always eager, and that was a time when reporters were around, the paparazzi, not as bad as they have now, but the paparazzi was around. They'd say, well, you know, your marriage, Desi owes it all to you anyway. We did it on your talent. She was as unhappy as she was very quick. She'd say, wait a minute. And she'd say, Desi is the genius behind this. She said, he did the 3-camera technique and before live art, and that was true. She knew that they were doing it on her. She was the star of the show. But she said Desi is the one that turned it into an empire.
Well, did she grow to resent him later on? Because in Barbara Walters' book, Audition, she recounts one of her most uncomfortable interviews that she ever had. She was talking to Lucille Ball many years after the divorce with Desi, and she seemed like she couldn't get over her ex-husband and kept calling him a loser and that he would lose it everything.
You're talking about, that's where she talked about Desi?
Yes, yeah, in an interview Walters. With Barbara Walters.
In fact, yes, I do know that. I'll be honest with you, don't tell Barbara, but I didn't read the book, but somebody told me about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear to God, I never, ever heard her say that, ever. And I was with her. Good times and mm-hmm. bad times.
But it was on it was aired. I actually watched a clip of it, and it, she is sort of like, she seems like she has a very heavy heart.
Well, I do agree with, I mean, certainly. You know what? Mm-hmm. I think Desi was the love of her life.
Like, if Mark and I ever separated, I'd be chain-smoking and till my voice went, and I'd be complaining for the rest
when
of my life.
When you give an interview to Barbara mm-hmm. Walters, don't tell her that. Don't tell her Mark was not good.
So you just think Barbara maybe caught her on a bad day? And
well,
she was...
you know, all I can tell you is the Lucy I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly was with her day and night for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I was there in the... Now, why she chose to do that, I don't... Mm-hmm. I mean, I know she said that. But why she chose to do that, that's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Because I swear... Now, there were times she was furious with him and all, but never did I ever hear her use that. And I remember that now, and that shocked me. That honestly shocked me, her quote, mm-hmm. you know.
Carol, we have some questions from the listeners here, and we're running out of time, so we want to get through some of them here.
But I'm just sick about that.
Well, we can go longer if
you want to. No, that's all. You go right ahead. Don't let me interfere. I think I'm going to throw up. I sound very June Allison. I hope you know who that is.
I do. Is that the Leave It to Beaver mom?
Yeah. No, but that's close.
Mother knows best.
Peter Pan collar throw up time. Yes. Yes, it is, darling. And you talked to Carol Channing, my good buddy, because mm-hmm. I was the second dolly in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I followed Carol Channing. Well, she was still doing it when I played it in Australia for 2 years. So we are bosom buddies.
Did Carol give you any advice on how to do the role?
Be good. Now, go ahead with the question, sweetheart. Okay.
Let's take this one from Curtis Jensen. You were on several episodes of Dynasty.
Yes.
What was harder to do?
Okay. I played a world-famous madam. You understand that was a stretch for me, but I could do it. And I played a world-famous madam, and I loved it. I worked with Joan Collins a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, I just loved her. So, I don't know, maybe you had two divas there, but we got along great.
So you were Team Joan, not Team Linda.
That is correct.
And was Linda Evans, like, mean and cruel and I mean, because they didn't get along in real life.
No, but they did on the set. Mm. You know, I mean, I never saw any problem.
Because it was, you know, a lot of people compare their relationship sort of to Joan Crawford and Betty Davis in the filming of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And you're a Texas girl.
Make a face for Jesus, yes.
Any kind of connection with Joan Crawford? She was a San Antonio girl.
Her name was Lucille LeSueur. Yes. And she came earlier. But I just thought, if I can be like Joan Crawford. And didn't I love it with the black and white film? Do you realize how much more attractive you can be, even though I'm a redhead, with all that lighting and the shadows? Remember how Joan Crawford mm-hmm. used to be in the shadows a lot? and I loved that.
Coco wants to know, I love you so much, Carol Cook. Back in 2006, you guest starred on Grey's Anatomy, primarily opposite T.R. Knight. This
Correct.
Was all before the scandal broke between him and Isaiah Washington. You
Correct.
Know, I'm curious if you noticed any on-set tension then. Either way, what was your reaction to the scandal?
Okay. Number one, I have nothing, but I tell you, I loved doing Grey's Anatomy. I loved that part. You know, and we in the business, as you all know, it had a very wonderful beginning, a middle, and a conclusion. And you don't get that much in television. You know, you guest star, and it's all one note. And I loved that part. And T.R., I saw none of that tension, none of it. But I will be truthful. All of my work was with T.R., whom I adore. Mm-hmm. And
I hear he's an excellent kisser.
Oh. And we could go further, but I'm not going to soil your ear. No, just kidding.
Okay.
You know, and I never saw Isaiah. Is that his name?
Isaiah Washington.
Yeah. Yeah. Isaiah Washington, yes. And I met him. Couldn't have been nicer. But all I did was say hello and goodbye to the rest of the cast. I only worked with T.R.
Okay.
So mine is a very limited. And it was right before all of that happened. So if there was tension, it hadn't manifested itself yet.
Well, you were also on McMillan and Wife in the 1970s.
Yes. My husband and I both were on that.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I loved, in fact, we just went to Lake Arrowhead to a film festival. Tom and I were guests there. Mm-hmm. And because we both were with Rock, we both spoke, you know, and mm-hmm. they showed clips of McMillan Wife, which I haven't seen since I did it, and Tom hadn't seen his. So that was fun, and I loved Rock. He, you know what I wanted when we were doing 42nd Street out here in L.A.? Mm-hmm. I wanted Rock to play the Jerry Orbach part, but I saw him, and I knew something was wrong. I thought it was a heart, something to do. I didn't know at the time it was AIDS. Mm-hmm. He hadn't come forward with that information yet, so I didn't know it. But I tell you, I thought, what a great thing, because he only had to sing one song, didn't have to dance. It would have been a great part, vehicle for Rock, you know?
Mm.
And I loved, Tom and I both, we were crazy about Rock. He was one of the sweetest, nicest people you'd ever want to know.
Were you aware that that he was gay, or was it? Did you find out?
Okay. Yeah. I don't think. Now, maybe I'm wrong about this because people didn't go around talking. That was a more closeted time, certainly. Mm-hmm. And certainly when he came along, and at the beginning when he was such a heartthrob and all, I think it really would have ruined his career. I don't know that, but I think it would have been very dicey for him. But and he was very discreet, very, very nice, lovely, a gentleman. And I loved him, of course. And we all knew he was gay, but didn't matter to me.
Besides your appearances on with Lucille Ball, one of the most memorable moments in film for me was when you played Grandma Helen in 16 Candles. And you that wonderful scene upstairs when you're going up to Molly Ringwald and it's like, oh my, our little girl's all grown up. And then you grabbed her breast. Yeah, how did that, was that improvised or was that scripted?
Now, don't be a smart aleck. And I'm telling you, I didn't grab them. I reached for them. But my hands never touched Molly Ringwald. I want you to know that. And I said, oh my, she's got her boobies and they're so perky. And I tell you, I do a one-woman show, and so I play a lot of campuses and stuff. Well, let me tell you, when I was doing that film, I thought it was a darling little film. I never paid much attention. I mean, I did it. But do you know, that follows me around everywhere, that line. And when I said, breakfast is ready, I opened the donuts with my long fingernails and said, breakfast is ready. And people quote that, and I said, that's fabulous. Mm. I've been lucky that I've done several movies that have become very youth-oriented or very cultish. The Incredible Mr. Limpet was my first movie, and that, because of the animation and all, became a cult movie with Don Knotts.
And that was the last animated movie Warner Brothers made.
Oh, how good of you to know that. And that was, I mean, and it was fabulous. I loved doing that movie. And
we loved you in that movie.
What was it like working with Don Knotts?
Oh, just like you'd think it would be. Easy. Easy. I say, oh, Don, wake up, honey. We're on now. Let's sparkle. He was so fabulous. And that was my first movie. I didn't know what hit the mark meant. You know, I thought that, no offense, I thought that meant hit mark. And
was there any offset romance between the two of you? You know, I'm trying to do like what they do with Twilight with the actors, like, sort of pair them off.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what, I thought there was a lot of chemistry when I did American Gigolo. Now, of course, I'm afraid that's just on my side of the thing, though.
Richard Gere.
I'm afraid you could mention my name to Richard Gere, and you'll go, who? But I was the first one he went to bed with in American Gigolo.
Oh, I'm going to have to rewatch that
film
now. Yeah,
just watch that scene, sweetheart. Richard Gere was, and I'm not goody two-shoes. I sound like everybody was, but you know what? I will be honest. You know, most of the people I've worked with, and I've worked with the best and the worst, and you know, most of them have been really terrific to varying degrees, but nonetheless terrific. I've met very few really techie people, you know.
Well, what about Michael Kearns? He's giving us
him.
A shout out to you.
Yeah.
Oh, Michael Kearns. He started the stage benefit here, and we're the longest running AIDS benefit in the world 26 years ago.
Wow.
And Michael Kearns was one of the two people that started it with David Gallagher. And so I love him. He's brilliant. He's got a fabulous daughter, too.
How has the fight against AIDS changed since the days you got involved in it in the 1980s?
Okay. I remember the first time I heard of anybody having AIDS. We didn't even have a name for it then. And they just called it a gay disease. AIDS. And I started in 1983 when I started working. It was 84 when I became really involved. And a friend of mine was in 42nd Street when I was in it out here in L.A., and it was after New York, and he had AIDS. And I thought, oh, my God, I'll probably never know anybody. This is some exotic disease that not many people... Well, time taught me better than that. And you know what's sad now? Because the cocktails we have, the medications, have taken some of the fear away, which I'm grateful for, but we've lost the fear of getting the disease. 56,000 new people. We have people that have gotten AIDS the past year. 56,000, and that's shocking.
Well, I think they can start by not calling the drug regimens, the pills that you have to take, cocktails. Doesn't it bother you that they're called cocktails?
Well, yes.
Like it's a party?
Because, you know, that makes it sound pleasant.
It should be more like, what would be a better word instead of cocktail?
Well, they're bitter pills, aren't they?
Yeah, bitter pill. Yes, a bitter pill are, you're up to your thing in medications. It's not a cocktail. It's not a cocktail.
Well, we're looking so far. We're hoping that we'll be able to make it to August 15th at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco.
Oh, I want to meet both
thrill.
Of you.
We
I
will try to be there.
I want to meet both of you, darling. And I always come out and say, everybody in that audience wants to wear my drag. And they don't care so much about me, but they love the I said, we're going to have to find a cure for AIDS. We're going to have to. I'm running out of drag. Do you understand me? But anyway, it's my pleasure to do it. I just wish we didn't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll keep on doing it until that day comes.
Carol, thank you so much for talking to us. I'm going to give you a little tambourine ring. Thank you, Carol.
I loved it. And thank you. And one day, I hope we do meet, my
Absolutely.
Darling.
Absolutely. I love your Texas accent. It reminds us of being in Austin.
Oh, my God. That's why I scream, make a face for Jesus. I said, if this doesn't work out, evangelical work is just around the corner. My grandmother still thinks I'm out here doing missionary work. Okay?
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Carol Cook lives with her husband, Tom Troop, in Southern California. You can buy a map to actors and celebrities' homes and find out where she lives.
Or you could just see her on Sunday, August 15th at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco for Help is on the Way, Northern California's largest annual AIDS benefit concert. It has a star-studded cast.
With Carol Channing and Bruce Valanche and many, many more. We are so thrilled and excited to have talked to Carol Cook. We want to hear from you. Visit our website, feastoffun.com, and share your thoughts and memories and anecdotes about Carol Cook, 16 Candles, and Lucille Ball.
If you like our show, subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Feast of Fun and then hit subscribe.
Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/feastoffun, or let us know what you think on Facebook, facebook.com/feastoffun. We're going to leave you with a little clip of Carol Cook singing Before the Parade Passes By from the album Tap Your Troubles Away, a tribute to the words and music of Jerry Herman. It's available through our website, feastoffun.com, and also the incredible Mr. Limpet. You can rent it on iTunes for $2.99. It was Warner Brothers' last animated film. It's hilarious and it's fantastic. I highly recommend it. And you can also get 16 candles as well.
Wow. All that. Just visit our website, feastoffun.com.
For the links, I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Villian.
Bye, everyone.
Look at that crowd up ahead. Listen and hear that brass harmony growing.